whether you're in person or online, thanks for being with us this Sunday. Real quick, just to get us all on the same page, we're continuing our series, Thrones, where if you've been with us for a while, we've been going through the scripture narrative, starting at the beginning of the Hebrew scriptures all the way through. We'll get to the Christian scriptures, the New Testament, in a little while, but we're in that spot where we're talking about the kingdom of Israel. There's the northern kingdom, the southern kingdom, because they divided a while back. We talked about that. And we've been in that period, kind of closed last week with the fall of the house of Ahab. Ahab and Jezebel were the power couple in the northern kingdom. They were very wicked, evil people, took whatever they could at the cost of anybody that stood in their way, and they have finally met their demise almost completely. We saw last week, because it's not just continuing our series, it's continuing kind of from last week where we left off, that last week we saw that in the northern kingdom, a man named Jehu, an army commander, had basically taken over, done a military coup. He had wiped out the king, Jezebel, the queen mother, other kids of Ahab's, purged the entire government, just wiped everybody out. And including kind of a collateral damage almost, if you would, is the king from the southern kingdom, Ahaziah. He was just up there visiting family. He was related to the king of Israel. He was just there visiting because he was in bad shape and got caught up, and he's killed by Jehu as well. So if you would, kind of in the space between last Sunday and this, let's imagine that word has traveled from the northern kingdom down to the south, and it reaches the ears of Ahaziah's mother, Athaliah, who is the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel, who had married into the line of the southern kings. And when she finds out about it, she is going to react quickly and crazily. We're going to be in 2 Chronicles chapter 22 if you want to follow along in your Bible or on your devices. If you want to, the words will be on the screen, the verses will be on the screen for you as online as well. But we're going to start in chapter 22 and verse 10. It says, "When Athaliah, the mother of King Ahaziah, learned that her son was dead, she began to destroy the rest of Judah's royal family." This is insanity. It is drop of a hat. She hears it's on because she is freaked out. But this is not just kind of a whatever. This is like full-on Order 66, whatever you want to think about it, however you want to process it, this is what's going on. The craziest thing, though, is you have to realize that it's not just the royal family. It's her family. She's the royal family. It's people that are her kids, her grandkids, nieces, nephews. There's a connection there. But she is so terrified about losing power because she doesn't know if Jehu's coming south. She doesn't know what's going on. She knows that people don't like her. That's very apparent. We find that later. We saw it in the northern kingdom. A lot of people are unhappy. And she just goes into this self-preservation mode. Everybody is expendable for my power. And she wipes out everybody, or attempts to. Not just people of age, but even children. Verse 11 says, "But Ahaziah's sister, Jehosheba, the daughter of King Jehoram, took Ahaziah's infant son Joash and stole him away from the rest of the king's children who were about to be killed." Just to kind of get you all where it's at, this lady with a strange name, but I'll keep saying it because she's important to the story, Jehosheba, she is the daughter of a previous king. She's a royal family member herself, but she's not considered a threat because she's not in a position of power, but she has the right to it. She is the sister of the king who has just been killed. She goes in and realizes what's going on, and instead of claiming her right, because here is Athaliah saying, "Well, I'm the queen mother, I should rule." Here's this woman who could rightfully say, "What are you talking about? I'm the daughter of a king. If any woman's going to be on the throne, it's me, because I have a right. I'm not just some outsider who married in. I was born here. I'm the daughter of a king, the sister of a king, the granddaughter. My line goes farther back than yours in this kingdom." But instead of trying to force herself into power, she sacrifices her security for this young boy, the son, the infant son of the king who has just been killed, and she takes him away. But she goes farther. She just doesn't take him. She actually put Joash, the verse continues, and his nurse in a bedroom. And in this way, Jehoshaphat, wife of Jehoiada the priest, we'll get to him in a moment, and sister of Ahaziah, reminding us that she is the sister of the king, she hid the child so that Athaliah could not murder him. So it's not just she tries to grab him, take him away. This is not a Moses thing, put him in the river and figure out what happens. She takes him, puts him away, and it's not just for a short time period. Verse 12 says, Joash remained hidden in the temple of God for 6 years while Athaliah ruled over the land. Okay, to help us get that in our mind, because sometimes we can just read past it, I want you to think with me all the way back to June 2018. Pre-COVID, pre-all that. It's a different world. It feels so long ago, doesn't it? 6 years. Or think ahead, if that works better for you, to June of 2030. It's scary that 2030 is only 6 years away, but that's how, you know, it seems far away. That's how long we're talking. And I don't know if you're anything like me. I don't know if you ever drive and a police officer gets behind you. I may be doing the speed limit, I may have stopped fully, but it doesn't matter if they're behind me. I am pulling into a business I am not planning on shopping at. I am going into a subdivision of whom I don't know anybody. I am changing lanes and dropping my speed. Just please, go ahead. Because it's just that feeling, right? These people, this couple, Jehoshaphat and Jehoiada, they lived in Jerusalem. Do you know how many palace guards are around? For 6 years, how many times over their shoulder do they look? How many times do they wonder if they're being followed? Do they take the long way home from the market? How many times do they try to read the body language, the looks in people's eyes? 6 years. How long do they worry about every cry of an infant? How long do they try to keep him from playing outside too much where people might notice a family resemblance? How hard would it be? Not just to not try to take power, but for 6 years to sacrifice all your safety, your security, take all that risk and all that worry on for you and your family. You didn't need to do this. You were safe. You weren't a threat. But yet you took this on for this little child for no other reason other than it was right. 6 years they did this. But finally, either it was just too much, too long, or it was just time. Chapter 23 starts and tells us, in the seventh year of Athaliah's reign, Jehoiada the priest, Jehoshaphat's husband, this family who has hidden this child, he decides to act. He summoned his courage, which is a phrase that is doing an extreme amount of heavy lifting, if I could be honest. He summoned his courage and made a pact with 5 army commanders. You are about to try to do an hopefully not super hostile takeover. You are trying to replace the queen who has killed everybody in her way and replace her with a 6-year-old boy. And hopefully doing it as peacefully as possible, you're going to need to summon your courage. That is just like understating it. But he does. And these 6 men together, verse 2, they traveled secretly throughout Judah and summoned the Levites and the clan leaders in all the towns to come to Jerusalem. Clan leaders, we get, there's family leaders in all these places, people that don't live necessarily in towns, they go all throughout, but they also talk to the Levites. To understand who they are, the Levites are the descendants of one of the original 12 tribes, sons of Israel. And their job, their whole role, their inheritance is built around the spiritual side of the kingdom. That's what they're responsible for. In Jerusalem itself, in the temple, it's become that, but also all around the kingdom. They also have some civil duties as well that we won't get into for today, but this is who he calls. And they go and they meet with all these people and summon them back, probably, if I could guess, at some kind of festival time, because the last thing you want is, hey, there's a bunch of people in town that they seem to be in charge of a lot of things. Why are they here? You don't want to attract anything. You do it at a time that would be safe to do so. But they all come to Jerusalem. And I don't know how much they told them, but once they got there, they broke the news. Verse 3, they all gathered at the temple of God where they made a solemn pact with Joash, the young king. Jehoiada said to them, here is the king's son. The time has come for him to reign. The Lord has promised that a descendant of David will be our king. I want you to imagine this. Imagine this meeting and you finally meet this young boy. all the pressure, all the emotion, all that comes with, oh, this is real now. This is, I was hoping that maybe what this was meeting was about, but here's this young boy, it's like, here's the king. It's just the shock, the overwhelm of, this is real, but now we've got to make it happen. But Jehoiada has a plan, and he starts to put it in motion, verse 4. He says to all those who are assembled, this is what you must do. When you priests and Levites come on duty on the Sabbath, a third of you will serve as gatekeepers. There's a lot of entrances and exits. I'm going to station you all around. I need you there. Verse 5, another third will go over to the royal palace, and a final third will be at the foundation gate, and everyone else should stay in the courtyards of the Lord's temple. It's like, I need all hands on deck. I need to know everyone, everywhere. We're going to put people there, there, and there. I need to know everybody because this is going down, and I need to have this all in place. Verse 6, remember, only the priests and Levites may enter the temple of the Lord, for they are set apart as holy. The rest of the people must obey the Lord's instructions and stay outside. This is, I think he does this for two reasons. One, he's really relying on God's power in this moment. He's like, we are not going to take any chances. Nobody's breaking the rules. Because we're asking God to help, because God's going to need to step in to help us with this, because it's crazy. So make sure everybody do the right thing. Also, if somebody's stepping in the wrong place, it's a problem for us, and so we're going to make extra sure that politically, I got to have everybody where I know. If they're not supposed to be here, they're a threat, and I know to change. And this is how seriously he takes it. Verse 7, you Levites, form a bodyguard around the king and keep your weapons in hand and kill anyone who tries to enter the temple. Stay with the king wherever he goes. Hopefully he was a very calm 6-year-old because you're running around with weapons, but he's probably going to stay around this. But this is not, okay, this is not the normal. This was not the, okay, hey, we're so glad you're visiting the temple. Maybe you didn't know the rules. You're an outsider, whatever. Can I just escort you to one of the entrances or the exits? You'll see them by each of the giving boxes. I don't know if they had giving boxes, but let me just get you to the right exit and we'll just, you know, make sure we keep the rules here. He's like, that's not today. Okay, this is not you go to Disney and somebody helps you not go where you shouldn't go. It's like you go behind the scenes, you get shot. This is what we're talking about. Because we are not taking any chances with this and with this boy. Stay with him. Verse 8, so the Levites and all the people of Judah did everything as Jehoiada the priest ordered. The commanders took charge of the men reporting for duty that Sabbath, as well as those who were going off duty. Jehoiada the priest did not let anyone go home after their shift ended. Mandatory overtime, congratulations. You are not going home. It's like, why would you do this? Because they've been there, and they hear the rumblings, they see what's going on, and loose lips sink ships, and yes, I did practice that. No, I've made it through twice today. I'm not doing it. But you're not taking a chance. You are not going to send anybody home and say the wrong thing to the wrong person because then the wrong people show up with the wrong thing. He goes even farther. Then Jehoiada, verse 9, supplied the commanders with the spears and the large and small shields that had once belonged to King David and were stored in the temple of God. Why are you doing this? A, you need weapons in case it all goes down. B, it's not like you can walk up to the queen and say, hey, queen, just going to need some extra weapons today. Don't know, just feeling it. Somebody, maybe there's an attack on the temple coming. It's like, why do you need weapons for? Yeah, don't ask about it. You'll know tomorrow. No, you can't do this. So he's pulling everything out, all of his manpower, all of his resources, everything is invested in this moment. And he stationed, verse 10, all the people around the king with their weapons ready. They formed a line from the south side of the temple around to the north side, all around the altar. Here's the moment that they've been planning for and waiting for and praying for. Verse 11, then Jehoiada and his sons, I want you to notice that because it's important later, they brought out Joash, the king's son, placed the crown on his head, presented him with a copy of God's laws. This is something that they had done all the time if they were able to do it, if the king wasn't bad and didn't want it. The whole thing, way back when, God had said, if you're going to be in charge, you're going to be a king, there's a certain way to rule, there's a certain way to treat people, and part of your coronation is going to be getting these laws that you're supposed to read so you know how to lead my people well and care for them. They give them to this young boy. They anointed him, like we talked about last week. They pour oil over his head, proclaim him king, and everyone shouted, "Long live the king!" Imagine the pathos. Imagine the emotion in those words as they yell. Jehoiada and his family, his sons, for 6 years, they had to make sure they didn't even slip a word of this boy's existence. And finally, they get to say, "Long live the king." And all the soldiers who have been, and all the people who have been plotting for this moment and praying and worrying and stressing, they finally get to relief and say, "Long live the king." And people who had been coming to the temple to worship, no doubt for the last 6 years, praying, "God, if there's any way you can deliver us from this evil woman who's taken over from this evil family, is there any way, God, is there any hope?" And they see this young boy crowned king, and they say, "Long live the king." But when people get loud, other people hear. Guess who heard? Verse 12, when Athaliah heard the noise of the people running, because as soon as people start screaming, people start running and figuring out either away from the trouble or to it and figuring out what's going on, and the shouts of praise to the king, because nobody should be saying, "Long live the king," because there is no king, there is a queen. Why are you saying the king? So she figures out where the noise is coming from, and she hurries to the temple to see what's happening. Imagine her emotion right now. Because she thought 6 years ago, she thought she took care of this. 6 years ago, she did all this under the worry of the threat that somebody might challenge her. 6 years. Maybe she wasn't as peaceful sleeping as she thought. Verse 13, when she arrived, she saw the newly crowned king standing in his place of authority by the temple, by the pillar at the temple entrance. Here's this little kid with a crown on his head. Like, "Where'd you get that?" "I have a crown." I don't know if they stole it. I don't know if they just made a new one. I don't know. It doesn't say. But here's this kid, and there's a spot, because the way their system was set up, the king was supposed to be the right kind of person and lead the people to do the right thing. And here he is in his VIP spot at the temple. The commanders and trumpeters were surrounding him. People from all over the land were rejoicing and blowing trumpets. Singers with musical instruments were leading the people in a great celebration. Folks, she just walked into the middle of the church service. It's just full bore. Everybody's singing. Everybody's happy. Why are they happy? Because I should, if I'm not there, nobody should be happy. If I'm there, nobody should be happy. She is like, what in the world? And there's, if I could, on the front row, the king is there partying. He's 6 years old. He's never been outside very much in public, because they had to hide him away. He's like, "This is cool. Everybody's here. Everybody's happy I'm here. This is awesome. For 6 years, I've been told to be quiet. Now I can sing." Everything is just crazy. But what does she do? Continues, when Athaliah saw all this, she tore her clothes in despair and shouted, "Treason! Treason!" And for those of us who have been reading the story, we just want to look at her and say, "Really? Really? Treason? You mean crimes against the state? Wouldn't killing the entire royal family, I don't know, be considered treason? You're going to lecture us now." But what else can she do? Everybody's happy that it's not her. They've obviously planned all this, and she doesn't have hope. Because sure enough, verse 14, then Jehoiada the priest ordered the commanders who were in charge of the troops, "Take her to the soldiers in front of the temple and kill anyone who tries to rescue her. This is the time. If you want to be on her side, go ahead. Now's time to fight if we need to." For the priest had said, "She must not be killed in the temple of the Lord." So they seized her, led her out to the entrance of the horse gate on the palace grounds, and they killed her there. 6 years. Took a while for justice. But 6 years after killing the rest of the royal family, she meets her due. And a Hebrew proverb was coined. Payback is an Athaliah. Kidding. Don't look it up. It's not an old Hebrew proverb. Took a while, but it happened. Verse 16, then Jehoiada made a covenant between himself and the king and the people that they would be the Lord's people. This was important, not just symbolically. This was a very normal thing they would do at coronations. But it was especially important at this moment, because for so many years, between Athaliah, her son, her husband, they had not been doing right. We'll see later they brought in Baal worship from the north. And this was a reminder, as much as it was something they were supposed to do, of the way God had worked throughout their history as a nation, as a people before that. It's the way that God works now. This is God saying, I will do something for you, and I will call you to be in relationship with me. He started that way back with Abraham. He started it at the Mount where he called him out of Egypt, didn't ask him to do anything, but he said, this is now your mind. Will you be my people? And Jehoiada says, this is our moment. We can reset, we can reestablish and remind ourselves of what's important. God has moved. God has kept his promise. We've always wanted, there was a promise for so long ago of a descendant of David always be our king. And God did something amazing. Yes, he used people to do it, and we'll give them their due shortly. But God has let this happen, and he says, now God is calling you to say, he's done his part, will you do yours? And they made this covenant together. Verse 17, and all the people went over to the temple of Baal and tore it down. They demolished the altars, smashed the idols, and they killed Matan, the priest of Baal, in front of the altars. Talked about it multiple times, so I don't have time to go into all the just horrible things that people would suffer because of worship to this deity. Kids, trafficking, just so many things that would happen. And it's wiped out. It's done. The person responsible is gone. Verse 20, then the commanders, nobles, rulers, and all the people of the land escorted the king from the temple of the Lord. Stay over here. We got business to do. Okay, now it's time. And this royal processional takes place. They went through the upper gate into the palace, and they seated the king on the royal throne. So all the people rejoiced. Excuse me. And the city was peaceful because Athaliah had been killed 6 years. It wasn't just the beginning, and then she became an okay person. She had been terrorizing people for years, and finally the city, it's at rest because things are set right again. To remind us of what we talked about last week, that Athaliah forgot, the consequences may play catch up, but they never lose. 6 years. 6 years of thinking she got away with it. 6 years of, see, this is how you rule a kingdom. Get the threats out of the way and you're at peace. But it was just delayed a little bit. And thus begins the reign of King Joash. Let's look at it together. Chapter 24, verse 1. Joash was 7 years old when he became king. And he reigned in Jerusalem 40 years. His mother was Zibiah from Beersheba. And Joash did what was pleasing in the Lord's sight throughout the lifetime of Jehoiada the priest. We'll come back and address that in a second. Verse 3, Jehoiada chose two wives for Joash, and he had sons and daughters. This makes sense in a couple ways. A, this kid's the only one. You got to get the royal line going again. But Jehoiada's careful because he's like, last time we just let anybody come in and be the wife of a king, that's how it turned out. We're not playing that game again. So he picks out the wives, like, buddy, you're young. Let me get somebody good, and they reset. And all of this goes down. And for a while, it's really good. There's a really cool story we don't have time for, so I'll give you the short version. Joash gets a little bit older, and everything is kind of normal. Temple worship's a big thing again. And at some point, he realizes, like, look, this place isn't exactly what it should be. It looks like it's broken down because it wasn't taken care of for years under the kings in Athaliah that didn't care. He's like, I've been reading in those laws that you gave me when I took over, and it says that we're supposed to fix this. And I think Jehoiada was just one of those guys where he's putting everybody else, he's like, yes, king, you're right, but I've kind of been working on getting a kingdom back together. I haven't had time, and if anything's going to suffer, it's what matters to me, because I'm not going to put myself first, even if it's the temple. I just wanted people to worship. We'll figure it out. And Joash sets this whole program in motion. It's amazing, of getting money from the people, getting it, and they rebuild everything, and finally, it's all reset. The temple's brought back to not its full glory under Solomon, but it looks nice. Everything is repaired. It's not a disgrace. All this is happening. Worship is reset. Everything, and Jehoiada's been the one under. And it's just, he takes care of everything and gets it done along with the power of Joash as king. And finally, it comes to verse 15. It says, Jehoiada lived to a very old age, finally dying at 130, which, that's a very old age. And this is really cool, verse 16. He was buried among the kings in the city of David because he had done so much good in Israel for God and his people. I kind of imagine this. If you go to countries that have had a lineage of kings, you might see, I mean, we have some in D.C. There's different memorials, but you'll go and you'll see the tombs of the kings. And I imagine a young family years later walking through and going and looking at either talking to the guard that's protecting the monument or reading the plaque that had been next to it and one of the young children saying, "This is Jehoiada. I don't remember in my history lessons having a King Jehoiada. Who is this?" And the parents saying, "Oh, I have to tell you the story about Jehoiada. He was amazing. He wasn't a king, but he did so much good that they buried him here because he was such an amazing person. He did so much good for our kingdom," and tell the whole story. And he gets his honor. And I wish that this is where our story ended. But it doesn't, because verse 17, after Jehoiada's death, the leaders of Judah came and bowed before King Joash and persuaded him to listen to their advice. "No doubt, King, you have had Jehoiada as your advisor for so many years. I know you're mourning his loss, and you're probably looking for some people to replace him as your advisors. And we would love, as the leaders of the nation, to come alongside of you and keep this thing going and give you the advice and fill his role. None of us can do it. We'll do it together." But their advice was poor. Verse 18, they decided to abandon the temple of the Lord, the God of their ancestors, and they worshiped Asherah poles and idols instead. Because of this sin, divine anger fell on Judah and Jerusalem. I'm not going to take any of the words. The words are what they are. There's a certain idea that's also conveyed in this of not just God being like, "You left me, I'm angry, and I'm going to get you back." I can't avoid all of that. But there's something a little bit deeper that if we just stop at that surface level, I think we miss. Let's go to the next verse, and now it'll help. Verse 19, yet the Lord sent prophets to bring them back to him. The prophets warned them, but still the people would not listen. This is God saying over and over again, "Can you just trust me that I know you've seen, I've done it before. I've taken care of you. Can you just trust me to follow me and not go away?" But still over and over, it's like, "Just, you said you were going to be mine. We had a covenant. We had an agreement. I was going to take care of you, but you don't want that. Why?" And over again, this happens. Until finally, verse 20, then the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, son of Jehoiada, the priest. He stood before the people and said, "This is what God says. Why do you disobey the Lord's commands and keep yourselves from prospering?" This is the heart of the message. Saying, God's like, "I know what's coming. I know what's good for you. I know what's not. You know you can trust me. Why are you moving away? This is where you will be doing best. You're keeping yourself from prospering. Why?" And he says, "You have abandoned the Lord, and now he has abandoned you." It's kind of like that person you've been calling and calling and calling, and you finally call him one last time and say, "I'm not calling you anymore." "But you're calling me now because I had to have one more excuse to call you and try one more time." And God's like, "Look, I'm telling you, I can't even just let you go without telling you I'm letting you go. I want you to know that I want you this much that I'll do it one more time." And you would think that when Joash sees the son of Jehoiada, maybe, just maybe, he'd flash back to that young 6 or 7 year old boy remembering the moment when he's brought out by Jehoiada and his sons. "You were the guys that kept me safe. I wouldn't be here if not for your family. You kept me safe. You made sure to do everything to put me as king. And yes, you're right. Wow, your dad, he gave me so much good advice. We were doing so good. You're right. I'm so sorry. How could I have ever forgotten?" That's how it should have gone. But it didn't. Verse 21, then the leaders plotted to kill Zechariah, and King Joash ordered that they stone him to death in the courtyard of the Lord's temple. This is not just, "I signed your death warrant because they wanted me to, I don't care." This was personal. He gives the order to kill him in a certain way at a certain place for a message. This is the place they didn't even want to kill Athaliah there. This is the place that Joash took power. And he's thumbing his nose. He's letting everybody know, in the place where I became king. No, the place where Jehoiada saved you. No, the place where I got power. Remember, I'm king. Remember that moment where I was made king? Where they saved you and they brought you out. No, it's the moment I became king. That's where you're going to meet your end. How dare you talk back to me? Dude, you sound a lot more like Athaliah than Jehoiada. Don't you remember, Joash? Consequences may play catch-up, but they never lose. And the writer puts it so brilliantly, verse 22, that was how King Joash repaid Jehoiada for his loyalty, by killing his son. Thanks, but no thanks. Zechariah's last words as he died were, may the Lord see what they're doing and avenge my death. But it's going to catch up a little faster than before this time. Verse 23, in the spring of the year, the Aramean army marched against Joash. They invaded Judah and Jerusalem and killed all the leaders of the nation, all those people that plotted, all those people who also had a part in killing Zechariah. The Arameans sent all the plunder back to their king in Damascus. We've talked about before, there's the books of 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles, they tell different stories, sometimes they overlap. Kings tells us the details that the plunder that they're sending back is actually, a part of that is Joash sending stuff as gifts to try to get him away. Because in any war, there's that mix of battle and diplomacy. So you're fighting when you have to fight, but you're sending messengers and saying, please, will you just go away? How about if I give you this, will you leave? If I give you this, will you leave? And it's that constant back and forth. And finally, they do, but not before. Verse 25, the Arameans did withdrew. They withdrew, leaving Joash severely wounded. But his own officials plotted to kill him for murdering the son of Jehoiada the priest. They assassinated him as he lay in bed. Then he was buried in the city of David, but not in the royal cemetery. If I could go back to my story from earlier, that young family visiting Jerusalem, seeing the sights maybe in between the temple services of a festival, and they go to the tomb of Jehoiada and they ask, it's like, it's so exciting to see, hey, tell me that story. Oh, it's amazing what Jehoiada did. We thought it was over and Athaliah had taken over and she was such a cruel leader and Jehoiada brought back Joash, the son of the king, and the line of kings remained. It's this great story, and that's why he's buried here. And then the little child says, oh, can we see Joash's tomb now? It must be close by, right? Well, no, he's not buried among the kings. Why? I'll tell you the story on the way. Completely different legacy. But if I may, today's story is not about Joash. It's just not. Today's story is not about Athaliah. It's kind of all contained in last week. In what I already said, the consequences, they'll catch up. They play from behind, but they'll catch up. They never lose. Today's story is not about either Athaliah or Joash. It's about two people with odd names, fairly, Jehoshaphat and Jehoiada. Because these, if we've looked at Ahab and Jezebel at being the power couple that you wouldn't want to have, Jehoshaphat and Jehoiada, they're a power couple in their own way, but the good kind. They're the center of the story today. Because I'll be honest, there's a lot of people here watching online. We've got kids, we've got people all over the building. There's potential in all of us, and I hope for good things for all of us. Likely, statistically speaking, none of us are going to reach the level of power, fame, fortune at whatever point Athaliah or Joash had. We're just not. And if that's your goal, you might be disappointed. But can I give you a better goal? It's this. See, you may not become the king, but you can be the hero. This is the story of Jehoshaphat and Jehoiada. Because she had a claim to the throne. She did, as much as Athaliah did. Jehoiada, she could have said, if any woman's going to reign, it's me. I have a right. Do whatever you want to with a kid. I don't care. I got my own kids. We'll start a new line. I'm still a descendant of David. She could have. Jehoiada obviously had influence. He was able to get army commanders on board, all these people to set this whole plan in motion. Could have done it for himself. King. We need a king, not a queen. My wife gives me enough right to rule, and we'll take over, and we'll do this whole thing right now. Who does Athaliah think she is? And probably, who knows if they would have been successful or not? So much turmoil and confusion, anything can happen. But instead, in the moment where they could have said, this is our chance to take what we want, instead they said, this is our chance to do something right. To do the right thing. We churchify things. We call people righteous. They were righteous people. They were. It's a simple word. It just means they did the right thing. They looked at it and said, I can't save all these kids. I can't. I can save one. I'll do everything I can. I will put myself in harm's way. I will sacrifice for 6 years or how long it takes to make sure, because that young person has a... They have a right to live. And I would save them all if I can, but I can't. I only have so much room. I can only hide so much, but I can do that one. I'm going to do right. Did it work out? Yes and no. But they're the heroes of the story. If we look at it right now, and I ask you, I say right now, I could guarantee your legacy, whose would you pick? Would you sign up for Athaliah's legacy? Joash? Jehoiada and Jehoshaphat? At some point, they're all dead, right? It's all about the legacy they left behind. What do you want for your kids? I hope for great things for my kids, for all of our kids, but I'm biased toward mine. I want them to have great lives. I want them to achieve things. But if you made me choose, I want them to have the legacy of doing right. I want them to be Jehoshaphat and Jehoiada. Because that's what matters. Imagine a world where that happened. Imagine a community of people that lived like that. Let me go one step crazier. Imagine our political process. If that's what may happen. Imagine if your party, my party, those are different. Possibly, I don't know, that's one of the beauties of Lighthouse. There are people on all parts of the political spectrum, and that's fantastic, because that's not what we're here for. Imagine, though, if our side, whatever side you are, whatever part of the aisle or in the middle you are, if that's what they decided. I don't care who gets credit, I just want the right thing done. Sure, put it through. Well, you might not get reelected. I don't care, because it's the right thing. What would that do? Would change a lot. But what if I did that? What if you did that? It may not change the world. Change somebody's, change yours. And if I may, this is the story of Jesus. It's why we're here. 2,000 years later, on the other side of the world, twice in a room like this, and all over the world. This morning, people gathered to sing songs to, about, and for him. To study things about his life or his teachings, or to get inspiration from them. To live more like him. Because he's the king. He is. Not question, not could be, maybe. He is. And as Paul so beautifully put it in the New Testament, he decided, like, I have all this. I'm God. I can take full advantage, but let me set it aside. Because what we didn't need was a king. What we needed was a hero. And he put all that aside and took on the form of a servant, because that's what we needed. That's why he's the hero. We just have fancy terms for it. Savior, Lord, all that just means, yep, it's all about you. That's his role. And if you have come to that spot, if you're here, it's why we're all here. This is the only thing, look around. This is the only thing that brings us together. It's why we are here. Whether you are fully committed and have been for years, or you're just curious and exploring, or just beginning, wherever you find yourself, it's why we're here. And if you are just starting, if you haven't made that relationship, that decision to be in a relationship, to follow Jesus, I'd love to talk to you or talk to somebody else or grab the card on the seat back that says the gospel. It's the same story, different words. But if I could speak to those of us online, in the room, where we've already made that decision, we have decided to follow Jesus, these are his marching orders. Following him means doing what he said, what he did. He's saying, look, it may not be easy. It may not cost us 6 years. It may cost us longer than that. It may not be easy, but I just want you to do the right thing. It sounds so simple, doesn't it? It's not easy, but it's simple. Do right. You see a chance, do right. That's the call of Jesus. It's why we're here, why we celebrate, why we sing. I talked to a young man after first hour today, and he said, I was thinking about it. He's like, because at some point, you can only do what you can do, and then you don't have any control anymore. Like, Joyetta did what he could, and then we died. It all went crazy after that. So he's like, I was thinking for a while, what's the point? I realized that was the point of doing right, because then you can rest. You can rest and say, I did all I can. May not fix everything, but I fixed what I could. That's the message. Jesus is saying, come to me if you're not sure. I'm here. I've done the heavy lifting already. Just like we talked about before, God has this history. It's the story of Scripture of God saying, here, I'm here and I will do something amazing for you. You haven't earned it. You haven't asked for it even sometimes. You haven't done anything to deserve it, and yet here it is. And the cross is the pinnacle of that. It's Jesus saying, here I am. You didn't deserve it. You did nothing to earn it, but here it is. Now, will you be my people? Will you be with me? Will you follow me? That's his call. If we did that, imagine the legacy we could leave behind. We've seen how it's changed the world. It's a different place from when he came, because of what he did and what people who got the message did. And we can keep that going. We can do wonders. Not through our own strength, we are who we are, but doing right, because that's what Jesus said. May not take you anywhere. May not put you in positions of power, fame, fortune, can't guarantee it. Sorry, wish I could. But you can be the hero. You can be the person that somebody looks back and say, man, I am so glad they were there. I am so glad they did right. Or, if nothing else, you can go to sleep at night and say, I'm so glad I did. We'll keep going with the series. For today, let's pray.